There's no separation, although there is, in a sense, there is a separation of consciousness, but it's the one life. So it's really unitary in a sense. So we call the waking state, the Sanskrit term for the waking state is jagrata. It's the one in which we must be regenerated, where we must come to a full consciousness of the self within, for in no other state is salvation possible. So that's our waking state, which we're fully conscious, but we're under the sway of the astral body, which is where the senses come in. Well, the senses and organs, the real senses and organs are in the astral body, which is an electromagnetic field that surrounds the physical body, which is our contact with nature as a whole. The best way to prepare for sleep is to have the good motives, altruistic motives. And so when we go into the sleep state, which is swapna, the dream state, which are included all the various states of consciousness between the waking and the deep sleep, such as trance, dreams, and visions, etc. It is necessary for the physical faculties to enjoy rest, for the lower emotional and astral faculties to live, become active, and develop. So we can ask ourselves different questions here. Where is man's consciousness focused at night? What functions during sleep? Why do dreams vary from the sublime to the ridiculous? And what are dreams? So man's awareness of his surroundings is possible only by his recognition of myself and other things. What makes him think of himself as being separate from others is the body and its openings and its sense organs. Even if a man is deaf, disabled, and his environment is not known to him to the extent of the disability, but a man also has an inner nature. He is aware not only of things of touch, taste, smell, etc., but also has feelings and thoughts. And we think of Helen Keller as an example of somebody who was missing the sight, the hearing, and the vision, but yet was able to be educated and articulate and intelligent, graduated from college, and was quite an intelligent person. So even when the intelligence is limited, it can, under certain circumstances, become freed, as it was in that example and others. There are other examples. So when the body sleeps, the bodily senses do not send messages to him. Thoughts are induced by the outer world, don't affect him, unless we are disturbed, and then we awaken partially. So we have to ask ourselves, where is the awareness when it has left the body? So this brings us to the second question. What functions in man during sleep? We know that the bodily senses are not functioning and the brain is not being used, that the memory is latent, all except the automatic organic functions of the bodily machine, such as the circulation, the heartbeat. They're all dormant at rest, but they're all functioning, but we're not actively aware of them. During waking life, there's constant telegraphic communication between the physical brain and the inner man or the ego. What Theosophy calls the ego is, we pronounce it different from ego, it's spelled the same way. It's that higher triad, the immortal part of man. Man and woman, of course, the soul is sexless. It's Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, or pure spirit, spiritual soul. And Manas is the mind or the thinking principle. So we call that the eternal pilgrim, the higher triad. And it uses the four lower principles of the physical body, the astral body, the passions and desires, and also the prana, which is the which is energy in a sense. It's the particularized energy of the human body, as opposed to jiva, which is the universal energy. So, not to be confused with ego, which is has to do with, that's like Freudian psychology, and that's not theosophy. Without digressing into that, so there is a telegraphic communication between the physical brain and the inner man, or the ego. And at night, also such a telegraphic communication is open, though little used, since the brain is not a single organ of matter, but like all other things, there's seven layers of receptivity. So we talk about a sevening in Theosophy. This everything is a sevening. So it's necessary to familiarize ourselves fully with the fact that the physical body we use is a machine. Machine parts wear out. Machine parts, when active, become heated, and it becomes necessary to let them rest. Our body functions by means of the life force, which we just mentioned, prana, which flows through it. So at the end of the day, when our body needs, we need rest and regeneration, because it's the overwhelming force of our body against really the whole of nature, which wears us down. We become saturated by this life force around us, and that's what makes us tired. So during waking life, other constituents of our makeup, besides the body, also get worn out. Our desire and passional nature have been active and must rest. Our thoughts have engrossed us, our will and our aspirations may have stretched almost to the breaking point. So we leave this sleep, we leave, and when we sleep, the mind leaves the waking consciousness and enters the dreaming consciousness. So it enters its own world, where it's unhindered and may develop itself by appropriate exercise. So the words appropriate exercise and develop must be thought of as, well, what must be developed? So, just touching on Sushupti, there are subjective and objective states and classes of knowledge and experience. So the language of the ego is that, that we need to learn that language in order to understand it. And in the deep sleep state, which we'll be going into in the second talk, that's where in dreams and visions of the night we are instructed, as it says. So ordinary dreams are confused. They're called idle visions, and they're caused by desires awakened in the chaotic activity by the slumbering reminiscences of the lower manas or lower mind. So during sleep, kama, which is our desires, and the lower mind, which is held in sway by these desires, they receive and send out electric shocks to and from the various nerve centers. The brain hardly registers them unless the impression is strong enough, and then they are stored in the memory without order or sequence. And awaking, generally, these fade out gradually. Some people claim they never dream. There really is no one who has never dreamed. Many people, if not most, do forget their dreams rapidly. So dreams are like pages torn from the book of life. We have dim recollections. They're often distorted. The ego or the real man lives its own life when it becomes free from the trammels of matter. But the personality, with its brain and thinking apparatus, is paralyzed more or less completely. Therefore, the physical man cannot be conscious during dreams. So there's a break. Now we want to mention there's seven kinds of dreams. We'll just touch on them. There's an appendix. There's an appendix in Transactions of the Blavatsky Lodge, and it touches on the seven kinds of dreams, and we'll just mention them without reading the whole thing here. There's prophetic dreams, allegorical dreams, dreams sent by adepts, good or bad, retrospective dreams. They're warning dreams. Sometimes they're for others, sometimes for ourselves. And other people can have warning dreams that are strongly impressed on them for other people. That happens too. Sometimes they're ignored. An example would be someone would say, I had a terrible dream about a train accident or a plane crash, and the person gets on the plane anyway, and a plane or train anyway, and it crashes. So there's warning dreams, confused dreams, which happen quite a bit, and there are dreams that are mere fancies and chaotic pictures owing to digestion or mental trouble and such like. So at this time, we'll hear from the second speaker. Thank you.
Unmute, please. Unmute, please.
Thank you. So we've heard about those first two states. We're also going to mention, all right, so there's waking, sleeping, and deep sleep. And then we'll just mention quickly, there's this other place that we experience that's referred to as Turiya, which is related to samadhi and like a parinirvanic experience. So we just want to let you know that that is a place beyond deep sleep, but we haven't been able really to find a way to describe it. So we would encourage anyone to take the opportunity when you have to learn about this state, which is kind of a nirvanic experience. But waking, dreaming, sleeping, even death, these are all states of consciousness which we can understand very little about, unless, as was mentioned by the previous speaker, unless we accept that there is an ego, our true identity, the immortal thinking being within the body. And this ego perceives and experiences everything in all of these states. So when the body sleeps, we, the ego, the actual thinker, we're not sleeping. The body is sleeping. It is we who enters each of these states of sleep, and in each of these states, we have a body or a vesture which is comprised of the lives of these such planes. All of these bodies in these that we use in these different planes are actually within this physical body, the physical temple that we use on this plane during the waking state. The ego enters these states and then reemerges from them according to law, according to cyclic law. And through this process, it always maintains its integrity. This ego, this mind being, is divine in its essence and not subject to change through the course of life. So, as the previous panelist said, we enter the dreaming state before we pass into this state of dreamless sleep. This transitional state of dreaming, we also return to this before we come back to the waking state. So we go through it into the deep sleep and then back through the state of dreaming on the way back to the waking state. So, what of this dreaming sleep? We're told that the far greater portion of the night's rest is dreamless sleep. So far as the body is concerned, it's almost as though the soul has left the body entirely. Okay, so then where does the soul go? What does it do? If the soul is immortal, it must exist somewhere if it's not on this plane. And the teaching is that the ego is more fully occupied, is more his real self during dreamless sleep of the body than at any other time. Thus is the saying, the daytime of the body is the nighttime of the soul, but the nighttime of the body is the daytime of the soul. Thus, the real man is active, is thinking on another plane altogether, a different state of consciousness from any state known to us during our ordinary waking existence. Okay. So, why or how is it that we know nothing about this when awake, of this activity on these higher planes during the sleep of the body? Why don't we know that? Why can't we know that when we're awake? Well, it's because actually we do, in the sense that all of the knowledge is within us, deep within us. It's recorded, everything we experience is recorded in our imperishable nature, kind of like a permanent entry on the hard drive of our being. And this goes on each day and each night. Every degree of experience of knowledge that we've acquired during this activity is recorded. So why don't we know this knowledge consciously? Why are we generally not even aware of it? And the reason for that is because that's karma. We're not generally aware of what we experience on different planes of consciousness because of our own self-created karma. We have set up causes somewhere in the past, which have resulted in creating the conditions in this life where we are entirely blocked from the experiences of our innermost nature. Said differently, we created and now inhabit an instrument, a physical body, which is not in accord with our own real nature. And our purpose here is to bring that back into accord so our real nature can be fully expressed onto this plane. In past lives, we deceived ourselves into believing that this material world is the reality. And this we become attached to. We identify with that rather than as our true nature. That's the fall. So when we involved ourselves into the material world, we identify ourselves with it and forget our own true nature. This is the propensity for people of the world to just accept that this body is what and who I am. Just now, but just simply saying, all right, well, I'm not the body. I am a spiritual soul. That's not enough to bring around the consciousness, but it's a start. Because being a mind being, we are far more powerful than we give ourselves credit for. Making the effort to dismiss the false idea that I am the body, I am the false idea that I am the body, and replace it with the true idea that I am not the body, I am the spiritual soul which lives in the body. This is the start. We have to think and act in such a way with force and consistency so as to counter the force and consistency of the false ideas that we have held to be true for perhaps many, many lifetimes. So there's a lot of karma built up in this material direction, and it has to be met with an equal and opposite, with a force moving in an equal and opposite direction, to raise ourselves back out. So this is why when we return to the body, upon waking up in the morning, we remember nothing of dreamless sleep. We've allowed the faculties of remembering that state of consciousness to atrophy or wither. We let it fall into disuse because we put our focus into this material world, this material plane, this physical body. And having done so, we have lived and acted so to create a block to our own regaining of this consciousness until we have developed wise. So we're not going to regain this consciousness until we have developed wisely and morally such that we will not abuse the powers associated with having gained the consciousness. So how do we regain access to the wisdom? Well, the materialist thinks that life is nothing beyond this body. Life will end totally and completely with the death of the body. That is the materialist point of view. All the thoughts and the acts of the materialist are sourced in this basis of thinking. But if the materialist changes that idea for the idea that he is immortal in essential nature, then this begins to work a transformation within him. Whether he knows it or not, the materialist still is a very powerful mind being himself. So let's look at it from the other side of the coin. Suppose actually that we were able to pass from the waking to the dreaming to deep sleep and even into death and then finally into rebirth in another body, all while doing this, we are fully aware of these states of consciousness, fully aware of the changes, and we remember everything of it. Our memory is completely intact. So we could have that memory available to us no matter what state of consciousness we're in. What would that be like? What would we be? We would be the evolved human being, which we all are on the path to becoming. We would know ourselves totally and completely. Therefore, we could know our fellow beings totally and completely, and could live our lives entirely from this basis of true compassion. We could help others around us in every way necessary for the evolution of the race and of all the kingdoms of nature. We can't do the work for others, but we would have the insight and the power to know best how to help others, how to help others help themselves. This is the purpose for which theosophy has been brought to the public world again. It is brought to us by those who are greater than we, by those who once were where we are and are now in a place where we will be by self-induced means, self-devised efforts. Their teachings remind us of our own nature and arouse us to action in their direction if we choose to do so. The object of theosophy is to teach man who and what he is. This is the doctrine of Krishna, of Buddha, of Jesus. It is all the ancient wisdom religion brought back to us through the efforts of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And this we call theosophy. So that is our presentation for this morning. And we would like to open the floor to any questions. Yes, SL?
In the first presentation, there were examples given, I believe, seven different categories of dreams. And some of those seem to fall more under the category or the idea of visions of the night. In other words, they seem to be experiences that we could not possibly have had in this one life, through the operation of our senses or our lower mind. So, are these higher types of dreams, are they actually, do they come from the brain and the body too, or are they the lessons, the experiences that we've had in this deep sleep state that we bring back with us as we go through the dream state again into the waking state?
Well, we can bring back these visions of the night. Sometimes they're prophetic or allegorical. Sometimes they're sent by adepts. But we're all one. The saint and the criminal are all one in the deep sleep state. We all experience that. And it's good for the criminal too, because it can help mitigate some of the most egregious activities, perhaps, if something gets through. Does that clarify things, or does that
Well,
is there a follow-up? Go ahead.
we could add to that. As regarding those seven categories, it is interesting because the point is, it seems like, yeah, it's coming from the deep sleep state where we experienced it, but there's something unique about that group of seven where it can come through and it will come to us. Such as, she says that prophetic dreams are impressed by the higher self, plain and clear. It's like a voice that we hear. So there are some that we can bring back with us. Then there's also, as was said earlier, adepts will send dreams to us, and so too can, other powerful minds for good or bad. But we'll just say that then there are warning dreams. That's another one. There are those who really won't be able to receive them and recognize them. So apparently some can and some folks can't. And there are warning dreams that may be sent to one person so that he'll get the message to another person who's not receptive. So it seems like it's not an absolute, but there's some kind of the relative receptivity to these deep sleep states, some of
It's
these dreams.
interesting too. There's not only dreams sent by adepts, but by mesmerizers and thoughts of very powerful minds bent on making us do their will. So that's why we have to try to purify our thoughts, because that will give us protection. If our motives are pure, we're protected. We're protected. But if we're constantly thinking of our lower passions and desires, materialism, just a transactional life, then we can fall prey to these things in our sleep and our astral. If we clean up our astral during our waking times, then we're less likely to be affected, much less likely.
NDW.
Well, there seems to be like two kinds of personalities in this waking consciousness that we seem to have a personality or an activity of a personal nature. But then there's that part of us that is watching the change or all these activities of this personality. What consciousness is that? Are we to develop that kind of consciousness and awareness, or is that just some fantasy?
Well,
So this speaks to the notion of, within every human being, there's the personality and the individuality. And the distinction between the two is the personality we use in this lifetime, which is comprised for the most part of all the lower vehicles, which changes by the second, by the day. And it grows or deteriorates or whatever, but the individuality is the immortal soul. And so sometimes they are at odds with each other because the personal self, if it is a willful selfish nature, is not going to pay attention to the messages, to the it's said that the voice of our conscience is the voice of the higher self, and it's whether or not the personality is going to take heed of it. To do so, to make the decision to bring oneself in line with one's higher principles, interestingly enough, it's a personal decision. We are personally going to take those steps in that direction and discipline ourselves and gain control over certain things. And it's a personal decision that one makes in a given lifetime. So perhaps that's the difference between that's the distinction between the shall we say the dual nature of the individual. Did the other panelists have a clarification?
So the higher memory of the spiritual ego is impressed in the Akasha, which is a more, it's a higher level of the astral. It's pure. And the memory of the astral man, the animal man rather, is impressed in the astral light, which is the dregs of the Akasha, or the universal ideation. So these are different ideation and thought facilities. And we are told, verily we are that. We are that, all capital THAT, which means the higher divine self. That is our true essence. We are not our thoughts, our feelings, our bodies, our emotions. We're the eternal ego, which is constantly accumulating experiences to transmute them and to raise up all of life as we raise up ourselves at the same time. But we've fallen in love with the lower and the nature and passions and desires, and our thoughts, our wills, our sensations. So they've ruled us. So we need to flip that around. We need to turn it upside down and right side up. MDW, did you have your hand up for something else, or?
We did, but we'll come back to that.
Sure.
SL?
Well, from the point of view of our everyday awareness, we spend about a third of our lives in sleep and dreams. And it said that everyone dreams, but we don't necessarily remember it. So besides the general suggestions given, is there anything specific we're told about in the philosophy of theosophy that we can do to cultivate dreaming so that these higher types of visions, these communications from a higher nature seem to come through more reliably? What can we do specifically?
Well, you know, we talk about, you know, can we cultivate dreaming? Well, dreaming is dreaming. We dream. So it's not that we're cultivating the dreaming, but we're cultivating that part of our nature, which is necessary to be able to bring the dream back and to understand perhaps a little more clearly what the meaning is of the dream. And in fact, HPB tells us that the process of cultivating dreaming, so to speak, when we cultivate our ability to understand our dreams, this process actually develops our clairvoyance. So what would step one be of cultivate dreaming? And the first step would be to, even if, you know, there are some people who really don't think that they dream, but we have to bring on the notion that yes, we do dream, and yes, we can learn more from those dreams. So in order to learn more from those dreams, we'll have to take action in that direction. And the first thing we would do would be to make a habit of taking a moment in the morning when we wake up and review to see if there's anything that came through. And just go ahead and write that down. Or as the morning goes on, maybe we're in the shower and something occurs to us, then we would write that down. Theosophy Hall, is there another suggestion?
Yeah, we
there?
Think that the best way to cultivate dreams is by concentration and meditation and our review of the day in detail before we go into the dream state, because that way we put things into perspective. We're not just drifting off idly. We're trying to be as conscious as we can, not be distracted, not be, you know, reading something frivolous, read something inspirational before bed in order to elevate the mind. And that's one of the suggestions.
So, okay, so meditation and concentration to develop our ability for meditation and concentration. Mr. Judge talks about a process, you know, when we do take the moment in the evening to read something of the higher nature, the voice, or other theosophical literature, that puts us in a place of mind where we will be more open to receiving, we'll just call it the dreams, more intact. Because if we're not of a universal mind frame, but more kind of a scatterbrain, in a scatterbrain kind of place, then when these ideas would come back to us upon awakening, it's like they're coming through a sieve and being all distracted and dispersed. So it's dividing everything. But if we're thinking universal thoughts, we're a little higher above what we otherwise are, and it's more of a flow of water. So we receive it in a more whole way that we could perhaps interpret, and won't be as scatterbrained as otherwise.
Yes, MDW, you had your hand up, and there's a chat as well.
Well, it seems that the dreaming state is an effect state, and that the real it's an effect of our daily life. So the more time that we spend conscious of these ideas and of how we treat people and how we try to help and try to have a perception of not being separate from everyone else, try to develop that in ourselves. Would that not also make us more porous to the dictates of the soul?
Yes. If we really look at everyone as our brother and sister, and there is no separation, and we have pure, high, and altruistic thoughts, and really think of others, we to the point where it may sound extreme, but if there was only one piece of bread left, you would give that to somebody else before you took it for yourself. That is, you know, that may sound extreme, but that is to the point which one, if one wants to really be a true altruist and live a saintly life, that's what one would do.
Well, so I think you're talking about there's a heart consciousness. You know, I think you said use the word compassion. I guess that's what our heart consciousness is.
Yes, does TK want to say anything on this?
No, we nothing. No,
okay. Yeah, so the heart really, there is a heart consciousness, and it's the highest consciousness which we can accept is our Buddhic nature. And that's the storehouse of wisdom and knowledge and the highest spiritual thoughts which we can access. So there is a chat. What does Theosophy teach about lucid dreaming? We don't really know how to answer that. The term wasn't, we think the term is a New Age term that came about later. Does anyone care to weigh in on
Well,
that?
in pop culture, the nature, the what is lucid dreaming? There are those who think that they can fall asleep and enter this dream, fully conscious, direct the dream, and do whatever they want to in a dream. That's our understanding of lucid dreaming. Now, we think we are correct in saying that just as an individual can be involved with other people very actively and yet still be removed from it and observe the conversation and be more proactive in thought and respond as a third person. If one does that, that may be similar to the idea of observing the dream as a third person. So there are some dreams we have found that we're very involved in, and there are others that we feel like we're watching something. However, we have no experience. We don't know. We haven't read anything in the philosophy that we recall that actually says we can control the dream and direct things that are going. Has anyone heard along that line? Yes, SL.
So lucid dreaming usually is characterized, one, by the person being aware that they are dreaming. It's like,
Okay.
oh, I am dreaming. And to a certain degree, some more than others can control what's happening in the dream, control the plot, we'll say.
Okay.
And thirdly, and this is probably the most interesting of where it gets its name from, the experiences are a lot more vivid
Yeah.
and lifelike. So obvious, and this also is something that varies. So obviously, it's involving the astral senses. But the fact that there is this awareness, self-conscious awareness that we're dreaming and control it, it's not a true dream state. It's what's called in the philosophy the waking dream state, or a transition. Between that we go through between waking dream, remembering it's a cycle, and cycles of consciousness, just like cycles among people, don't act abruptly. There's a overlap between going into one cycle and coming out of another. We see this in the seasons, for example. So there's that time when we're both dreaming and both awake, and depending on our karma, as was suggested. We can experience that, what in modern times is called lucid dreaming.
Thank you. We would like to add one more thing to that. Earlier it was asked, what are some things that we can do to help us cultivate our memory of the dream? And we have experience with, as we fall asleep in our meditation before going to bed, to consciously make the decision that I'm going to remember everything that I dream, and when waking up, it'll be available and aware to me. We feel that that has, doesn't mean we remembered everything. No, but we find that we're more aware and more conscious of it. So that helps.
There's a hand here at Theosophy Hall.
What is it that is involved if we are, since we all dream, and if we don't remember it when we wake up, but at some point in time during the day, something could occur that will trigger a memory of a dream we had during the night? Does that have something to do with the astral, that the dream is there in the astral and then something triggers it and it comes into our mind?
Well, it says that for most, that dreams are like pages torn out of a book, and something, an event of the day, will relate us back to a dream and we'll partially remember something. And it may be good, bad, or indifferent. So that's our understanding. Does anyone else care to share about that?
NDW Henry hand up. Yes.
Well, we're just going back to the statement before that, where that, you should, I'm going to remember this dream. I'm going to be able to catch the, it seems like this is a positive affirmation. Yeah, and I think that we should do that with all of our things in life. Be positive. And affirm that.
SL?
So we also learn about three kinds of memory, and the memories that the kinds of memory that have most to do with the operation of the brain in our waking state would be associative memory. And this is where we've had an experience in the past, which is we're temporarily not aware of or conscious of. It's there in our memory. And we hear a song or a smell an odor or read something. And all of a sudden, what we forgot or was unconscious to it comes to the fore. And so that kind of associative memory that happens to the brain is the same thing with dreams. When we come out of that dream state into the waking state, they are finally impressed on our brain, but most people, as was stated, their brains aren't sensitive enough to make a strong impression, but it's still there. And so something can happen during the day that triggers the memory of the dream that we had. It brings it to light again.
Thank you. So we are just about at the top of the hour, and we'd like to finish up with a statement from the philosophy that life is one grand school of being, and we have come to that stage where it's time for us to learn to understand the purpose of existence, to grasp our whole nature firmly, to use every means in our power in every direction, waking, dreaming, sleeping, or in any other state, to bring the whole of our nature into accord so that our lower instrument may be in line and thus more and more fully reflect our divine inner nature into our world. So, with that, we thank you for attending.
Take
Have a
care,
good
everyone. Have a
study.
good day.